For the ones who get it done, the most important part is the one you need now. And the best partner is the one who can deliver. That's why millions of maintenance and repair pros trust Grainger, because we have professional-grade supplies for every industry, even hard-to-find products. And we have same-day pickup and next-day delivery on most orders. But most importantly, we have an unwavering commitment to help keep you up and running. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Ladies, at Essentia Health, you're not just a patient. You're a partner in your healthcare journey. We'll get to the heart of your health questions, even the ones you're embarrassed to ask. We'll find solutions to fit your unique needs and lifestyle, because here, we're in it together. Feel confident in your care and in yourself. Schedule a women's health appointment with an Essentia Health provider today. Click the banner to learn more.
Hi, I'm Lois Kelly, and welcome to the Agile Uprising podcast.
Greetings, and welcome to another edition of the Agile Uprising podcast. I'm this evening's host, Jay Hursko. Joined with me are Andrew Leff.
Yo.
Chris Merman.
Go Cowboys.
And Troy Lightfoot.
Hello, hello.
And the topic of this evening's episode is coaching snobbery, aka let them eat points. So, Merm, I'm going to go to you for a bit to start the intro, because this actually came from a conversation we had, I think it was via Slack, where we talked about the difference between the different tiers of coaching and how there is a little bit of snobbery and a little bit of ego involved, with coaches of different types looking down on each other. And your exact quote was, I think it's one of those, hey, that's not a problem I have, it's their problem sort of things, without checking egos at the door. I need to admit that I have a problem with this occasionally. We always seem to want more important coaching levels because of the gigs we end up getting. When I was a scrum master, I wanted to be a team coach. When I coached teams, I wanted to coach programs, then enterprise, then executive. And I think that if I'm coaching important people, then maybe by extension, I'm important. And that's really not the right approach now in hindsight. So you want to flesh that out a little bit more, Chris?
I mean, I kind of nailed it with that, with whatever I put in our Slack channel. I honestly kind of wanted to know, am I the only one that thinks this at times? And I think that's one thing that's great, not just about our community at AU, but also the Agile community overall, is that we are a place where we can say, am I the only one that struggles with this? Most of the time it's not, right? And in that, the struggle was, do I sometimes feel elitist? Do I feel more important depending on the level of coach that I am? And it has nothing, you know, I'm a salaried employee, so it has nothing to do with, like, I get more money if I'm a program versus team coach, but, there's a certain prestige to it. And I think that the response I got from people, from, you know, from specifically the group on this chat, but others that I've spoken to, it's like, no, I do feel better when I'm considered, oh, I'm an enterprise coach, or I'm a program coach. And honestly, I don't know. I don't even know if that's the right approach. You know what I mean?
Troy, first thoughts.
I think that hierarchy is part of human nature. Whether or not it's the best approach in an organization is debatable. But I would say it's natural to want to ascend to a quote-unquote higher level. My thoughts are that coaching, regardless of what level, quote-unquote level, because I don't even personally think of it that way, but coaching leadership, coaching teams, coaching program, portfolio, in my opinion, they're all needed and they're all equal, because without one, you usually don't get the best, full results, right? So kind of going back to integral theory and going back to a previous podcast, everything is a part and everything is a whole. So that's the way I think. So it's just as important that the Agile team is coached well, just as it's important that leadership is coached well. So I don't really see a difference. Now, maybe there's a difference when it comes to salary, when it comes to experience, different things like that. But really, you can have a ton of experience at the team level and have, you know, very little at the executive level. It doesn't make you any less of a person. It just means you haven't had the opportunity, because sometimes it's hard to get
right. Not to cut you off, Troy, but you're front loading our conversation. Right. We're gonna get to all that stuff.
So cut me off. Go ahead.
Fine, go Andrew, ahead. Initial thoughts.
Yeah. So Merm and I were going back and forth about this on Slack, and I've had some time to iterate through this madness in my head, and I had a little bit of a moment the other day, and I was like, I didn't realize this until I've been around a lot more coaches over the past couple of years. So I've been interacting with a lot more coaches, and I didn't get that hierarchical feeling until I was around more coaches, where I was like, oh, I'm a team coach. Ew, you scrub the toilet, right? It's like, oh, sorry about that. Someone's got to scrub the toilet, right? So it didn't seem like it was within the outside of the coaching bubble until I was inside the bubble that I started to feel this. Well, if you're an enterprise coach, you're at a higher level than if you're at a team coach or a program coach. And it just was a weird thing. I hadn't felt that in quite some time since I left, like, working full time in corporate America. Like, you know, I'm a level 6 VP. You know, I've got God rights, you know, on my computer. So literally that type of instance. So it's an interesting sort of challenge in my brain around that. Coaches rating other coaches.
So let me ask you this, to the panel. What is the difference between a team coach, a program coach, an enterprise coach? What is the difference? And I'm going to start with you, Merman.
Honestly, I kind of loved how Troy said it earlier about it. It feels to me like similar skills and tools and techniques and such are used, right? If you're facilitating a single agile team or a couple of agile teams versus a program team or an enterprise team, like, you're still facilitating, you're still trying to get the team from point A to point B. You know, I think that where the only nuance I've seen is when you reach the executive kind of level, there's definitely a nuance to the strategy that's involved. And so maybe when you're at the team level or program level, you're more kind of execution based and less long-term strategy based. I don't know. I'm throwing that out there as a maybe. So I don't know. I'll shut up there and see what other people think.
Troy, what do you think?
Is the question, sorry, Jay, rephrase the question one more time for me.
What's the difference? We so far in this conversation, we're about 6 minutes in. We've talked about team coaches, program coach, portfolio coaches, enterprise coach. What exactly, if any, is the difference between these different coaching strata?
Well, at the team level, it's just a different set of practices and processes, maybe. And then, so for instance, at the team level, you're talking about Scrum, Kanban, XP practices, those types of things, right? As well as individual and team coaching. But the individual and team coaching skills can apply to all the levels, I would say. But things like portfolio coaching or executive coaching, you may have to have other skill sets, maybe in business or when it comes to product management, that you might not necessarily totally get at the team level. At the end of the day, though, I think they're just different additional competencies that can be developed. But one of the things I wanted to say real quick is that Agile was developed at the team level, and the people doing the work, without them, we have nothing. So I think the idea of being a team coach is some kind of substandard thing is ridiculous. In fact, I think we need more team coaches.
Hear, 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 hear. Andrew, difference between the levels, if any?
So I struggle with this one. I think, yes, there's a difference, but I'm looking at coaching in a totally different way now. Just having struggled with having seen success at the team level and watching it scale and watching the struggles from scaling, I literally look at it as as a coach, you need to be able to move levels. So you need to be cognizant of all levels, whether it be team, program, portfolio, even leadership, because you're building a team. And how, as a coach, do you build that entire team? I think you need to be well-versed in all levels, or at least have experience. And it makes it very fractured. Unless you're mob coaching an organization, which I also think is effective, you need to have people that can communicate across all levels, because it's very hard, if we're looking at it from just a pure scaling framework, to scale from the bottom up.
Lef, I love that. I want to press on that for a second. Do you mean like you as an individual, like consultant, you need to move up and down levels per the organization, or you need people present at all levels, but different people?
So I don't think one person could manage. And again, it depends on the size, but I think collectively, let's say we're on the larger side of a organization, more of an enterprise-wide effort. I do think you need multiple coaches, but that are aligned, that are all moving in some sort of synchronization in a way that we're all practicing and training and teaching in a similar method to organize around the change that's coming or that's happening.
Well, the reason why I ask is I'm in a situation right now where I'm trying to get a couple of safe trains out the door. And so I'm doing the discovery and analysis and trying to get those people kind of enabled to, you know, launch their own stuff. But at the same time, there's an internal transformation team that also wants to get involved. And so I find myself, some of the time I'm talking with the program teams trying to get these trains launched, but at the same time, I'm also working with these internal people that want to like bring change and transformation and coaching and such inside the organization. So I find myself often having varying levels of discussion, like, you know, even in my own day. So I don't know. I do find that piece interesting. Troy, do you find yourself kind of going up and down the ladder of quote unquote hierarchy ever?
Well, right now, perfect example at the client I'm at. So I'm doing team coaching, program coaching, product management. So I'm working on creating, you know, in the safe realm, right? Working on creating epics. The next kind of step is true strategic themes and standing up portfolio. You know, I did stuff like, you know, standing up program Kanban and tracking flow metrics and working on the delivery pipeline when it comes to trying to get things out the door, right? On top of just doing team level coaching. So I just consider myself a coach. Like, I don't really, if you ask me what I am, I guess I'm a team coach, but I don't know. I mean, every client though, you're going to get different experiences and have access to different people. Like, I don't have access necessarily to CEO or that level of executive, right? But SVP, senior leadership, I do. So that's what's going on with me. To me, it's fun to work on many different things like that. But I'll just say this, going back to my previous statement, and I'm not talking about this client, I'm just talking about in general, people scale, yet they lack the fundamentals at the team level. And I think that's heavily, heavily needed, because if you, I posted this on the Slack earlier, but if you scale garbage, you get a huge landfill. So I really think there should be a need. Heavy need for team coaching, and especially in XP practice.
So it's interesting you say that, Troy. So I absolutely agree. And it's funny you say you're a team coach, but you're coaching at all levels. So to me, and I'm just going to say this because I'm in that state of mind at the moment. The whole tiering of coaching, whether it be team, program, enterprise, portfolio, whatever we want to call it, it's just about billing. So I can bill more if I'm an enterprise coach versus a team coach.
That was going to be one of my questions from the guy who on the podcast who's not a consultant. Is this whole coaching hierarchy thing almost a false dichotomy created due to bill rates by the vendors? You think that has something to do with it?
Me personally, yes. I think there is a skill set that a really solid team coach may not feel comfortable in front of the C-suite, right? It's a different relationship that you have with a scrum team than you do with executives. Now, that being said, yeah, I do believe that we've created a billing model that allows us to up the rate when we call ourselves an enterprise coach and change the rate when we call ourselves a team coach. And I think that's why people will turn their nose up at it. So as an independent consultant, of course I want to be an enterprise coach because I'll get paid more. Listen, we're all looking to make a living. So
yeah, so I don't know. Let me provide a counter, like the opposite. I mean, I don't disagree with it. I guess the other side of that is, you know, there are legit more coaching gigs than there are people. I mean, not just in the US, but globally, right? Like, We don't need to worry about finding employment right now. And I think that gives me comfort to kind of be real and authentic. And if I need to, you know, say some bad things or, you know, tell someone some tough truths, that makes me, I don't know, I have security and going like, I can find another job. Like, I don't care. And I'll probably get a raise in doing it because that's the competition there is. So I don't know. I feel like the reason why the hierarchy was invented is, you know, everybody has their CSM. And so it devalues the measure of like what a scrum master cert is. Same thing with like to say you're an agile coach is not enough anymore. Okay, well, what level of coaching have you done? Well, you know, I've kind of done a couple of teams. Okay, well, you're a team coach, or I'm a developer turn coach. Well, let's make him a technical coach. I'm talking about, you know, and I, you know, many companies do this type of designation. And so they do this because we have like the number of people almost dictate we have to have this hierarchy because the people that know what they're doing, who have been doing this for forever, we got to set them apart somehow. So we'll call them an executive coach. Like as BS as that sounds, it's kind of true.
So to bootstrap on that and to talk and to – I cut Troy off earlier, but to tie to his point where he was going, I personally view – and maybe I'm wrong, but I personally view the coaching skill as almost like a slider bar. It's a sliding bar. You know, like it's like this thing that the DJ uses to mix different decks, right? So on the far left, you have all of your Agile 101 type stuff, your gospel and your dogmatism and all, you know, how Scrum works, et cetera. But as you go further to the right and you go up the totem pole and you start coaching at different levels, and Lev touched on this too, I think it goes away from coaching Agile. And, you know, Lev always says, I don't coach Agile, I don't teach Agile, I coach people. It goes more towards, you know, the Troy Lightfoot curriculum. It's the integral stuff, and it's the spiral dynamics. And it really transcends, to be effective at that higher level, my two cents is I think it actually transcends the Agile teachings, and it's more about coaching and teaching other people and how meeting them where they're at. What do you think, Troy? Am I on to something? Am I drinking the Kool-Aid?
I was saying this recently in our Slack channel again, that a process is only as good as the human behavior behind it. So I don't care what process you have. If the human behavior behind that process and the people working in that process are not behaving in a way that's living up to values and principles of the Agile Manifesto, then you're not really being Agile. That's my opinion. Now, whether or not we care about being Agile, that's a different story. Okay. But the values and principles of Agile are pretty freaking good when it comes to how you would work. For instance, continuous delivery, motivation, quality, these types of things. They're not bad ideals, right? So I would say, going back to your question, Jay, I just really agree with Lef when it comes to coaching people. Ultimately, we are coaching human beings. Okay. And human beings have thoughts, feelings, emotions, anger, everything else, and their own insecurities and concerns, just like we do. And to pretend that, well, one person in the company is less than the other, as coaching is total BS in my opinion. So, they're all needed. Leadership coaching is extremely needed, as well as Agile team coaching, as well as everything else. So, I don't mean to. I might sound angry. I'm not really angry. I'm just kind of maybe a little frustrated with some of the state of things going.
Passionate is a better verb.
But see, let's be honest, like Troy being upset is like the most calm upsetness we've ever heard in our entire lives. Like it's, you could be stabbing Troy with a knife and he's like, I kind of hurt right now. This is not fun. I just need to point out, like, I know that Troy just gave you a big pat on the back left for saying that, but like, what a douchebag thing to say. I don't coach agile. I coach people. Like, well, no shit. Like, why don't you write John 3:16 after it, you jerk?
Hey, you know what? You'd be surprised when you say that it does resonate with people, because literally I know, you know, you just want to bust my stones. That's okay. I could take it from you from Texas. Stupid Cowboys fan. Go Birds.
Oh my God.
But I do want to reel this back in. So something that Troy said is compelling, right? So I don't know how you sell that. And I think that's where this tiered model comes into play, is that's what we as coaches want to strive towards for organizations. Listen, I spend more time with these companies than I do with my own family. I am completely invested in the individuals I work with to a fault, right? Like it destroys my personal life almost to a fault. But that being said, I think that this tiered model was created so you can support better billings, as opposed to building teams that will ingrain and anchor change within an organization to prepare them to continue to practice and continue to strive to improve and continue to experiment and continue to fail based upon the learnings that coaches come in and provide. I don't need to take snaps from the center anymore. Literally, I don't play quarterback. I call in the plays. I want to help the organization improve. Just because you win the Super Bowl, you don't fire the head coach. You're like, oh, we've got it. We've got to figure it out. No, it just doesn't work that way.
So I want to, if you guys will forgive me, I want to take a little bit of a left turn around what you were just talking about. So earlier, Andrew, you talked up, you know, you threw out the term mob coaching, and then, you know, I'm one of many coaches inside an organization, and you brought up the whole idea of consistency across coaches, right? So making sure there is some level of coherence. And I always think of shout out to Andy Clef, who interviewed Professor Dave Snowden, one of my favorite episodes that we've done. He has a quote here that I always rattle around in my head, where the exact quote is, if everyone thinks the same and everyone is aligned, despite of what a lot of Agile consultants will tell you, that's a total disaster for resiliency. His money quote here is, what you need is coherence, but difference, not conformance. So here's my first question. I'm going to go around the horn. How do you generate that coaching coherence and consistency of message across a span of coaches who are at different levels working with different people? And Troy, I know I'm going to drop this out of left field. I'm going to start with you.
Guys, I'm getting my thoughts together on this. I'm going to defer until the end, if that's okay.
Merman.
No.
Merman.
I'll jump in. So
I'll jump in.
No. Go ahead, Lev.
Merman's talked enough. I'm jumping in. So don't mind me. Merman gets enough airtime. I think in this regard, right, so we're literally looking at that whole – wow, I just completely lost my train of thought. All right, Marmon, you can go. It just totally vanished. I had a senior moment.
Leave that in. Like, do not cut that moment out. Like,
I'm not touching.
Like, leave that I'm not shit
in. Yeah, wow.
No. That's amazing. I'm going to step all over Marmon. I've lost it. So I guess I'm going to start with the contrarian thought is I don't necessarily believe in – like I feel like coaching, if there's more than one person that's filling the role of a coaching competency within an organization, you're going to have a difference of thought. My current coaching partner, Scott Frost, who is really accomplished within not only the SAFE community, but also just within SIQ in general. He told me, he said, like, I said, we were in a session and I kind of disagreed with him. And afterwards I said, hey, I'm sorry. I'm sorry. I kind of differed with you and thought I just felt really strongly to kind of voice my opinion. And he said, actually, I love that you spoke up because we don't need to agree on everything. It's actually good for the client to hear us working ideas out in front of them because they need to learn how to do the exact same thing. So if I'm right now, I've got a bunch of people that want to be coaches inside my current client organization that are dying to, you know, learn how to do it. And they're all like baby birds just saying like, feed me whatever I need to do. Like, tell me what I need to do to be a coach. And I'm like, well, I don't know how to do that. Just go do you and figure out how to help people like deliver shit in a better way kind of a thing. I don't know that that needs to be the same message. Like, no two coaches are this. Like, Troy and Lef and I, all probably having not spent time on the same client, we probably all coach differently. And I think that that's okay. You know what I mean?
Right. But my question is around coherence. And how do you make sure that you don't, like, we'll use Troy's favorite example lately when we talk about food groups, right? How do we make sure that you're not saying eggs are good, Lef's not saying eggs are bad, and Troy's not saying, well, I don't even need eggs. I don't know why anybody goes near it.
I go back to that same point of like, I don't know that it matters. No, I think we can say eggs. I think Lef can say eggs are good and I can say eggs are bad and that's okay.
So I'm going to use an example of a client that I'm working with that where this has become a problem where we have multiple coaches within the same portfolio and where you might say eggs, I might say chicken. That has caused actual internal conflict where the client becomes confused. So I do think there needs to be consistent vocabulary used, style, method, ability to teach should be completely artistic, right? Should be completely your personality. Yeah. You should be able to connect with the individuals you're working with. But I do believe if you're working in the same organization, and I'm going to tailor this to much more around a portfolio, value stream, solution, whatever we want to call it. It should be consistent up and down across all levels of that area in the sense of we should be talking and at least using the same vocabulary. So there's not creating confusion. Like literally some teams in my portfolio are a train. Some teams are a tribe. Some teams are something completely random, right? So it creates sort of all this crazy confusion. So
lack of ubiquitous nomenclature is actually causing problems because potato, potato, people don't know what they're actually talking about.
Right, because they don't take the time to understand the what the words mean. So they get married to the actual word, right? It's like DevOps. I literally have a swear jar in my Scrum room that if you say DevOps or refactoring, it's $5. Unless you can explain exactly why you're using that term. So I think we abuse the language because we don't take the time to understand what it means.
It's a good observation. Troy, I know you've been ruminating for a bit. Care to jump in?
Yeah, so I think like anything in life, I think there's truth in both. So the advantage of doing what Lef is talking about is, for instance, at the client I'm at, I'm working with another coach on a daily basis. We're not in the same meetings all the time. I mean, we have kind of different teams, different things we do. Sometimes we do pair on things, but we always sync up and talk about, hey, what are you working on? What am I working on? Let's kind of put our brains together and make sure we're trying to achieve the same goal, delivering a similar message, things like that, for exact reasons that, you know, Andrew's talking about, right? Maybe going back to what Dave Snowden is talking about, there's some truth in that too, maybe. And that's where there maybe needs to be a balance. Because when you get comfortable with one way of doing things or one way of thinking, right? Like human beings, they want to be comfortable, okay? And they don't like to be pushed outside of, most people don't like to be pushed outside their comfort zone. And it's just human nature, right? You guys familiar with this term hormesis? It's basically like, how
I'm not familiar with it, so
right. So it's basically like how it's a biological thing, but I do think it applies when it comes to it's a guess of mine that it applies mentally to, but basically hormesis is like whenever your body has stressors, that the stressors, your body resists the stressors, and then you end up becoming stronger because of it. But your body's first reaction is to always resist, to go back to a state of homeostasis. So for instance, like, exercise is a stressor on your body, and it actually breaks things down and things different things like that. But ultimately it can make you stronger. So that's an example, right? So I think that if what Dave Snowden is talking about is if everyone is saying the same exact thing, no one is challenging the status quo, maybe that's what he's talking about. You don't have difference of opinion. You don't have these stressors coming in challenging people, then you might not get the growth. So I do think difference of opinion and difference of approaches is probably very valuable. But I think there needs to be a balance between that and just confusing the shit out of people. So I do think that, and I'm not sure what the right balance is. It might just be different for every case.
But I think you're close to.
Let's all talk at once.
Yes, I know. As per usual, like Troy comes in and said, like, takes 5 minutes of rambling from the rest of us and is like, I'm going to make sense of this bullshit you all have been saying. So I guess the question is that I love the way you put it, Troy, but the question to the rest of us is okay, that makes sense to do. What are the things that we do in order to get that result? I mean, we could say just talk to people and like, let's align on like, how are the outcomes that we're all trying to reach and coach towards and kind of a thing. But like, that's pretty basic, right? So like, what's a deeper level of how do we actually do this shit?
So Troy, back to your point, you are correct in what Dave was talking about, Professor Dave, because I think the next money quote that he has in that line of conversation is, we're trying to create systems that learn, and air quotes, happy systems don't learn, they're complacent. So that's basically it. They're trying to, you know, if you don't have any stressors in the system, you never learn where the leaks are. You never learn where the shortcomings are. I want to throw one out there while we're talking about the different levels of coaching. And I think it was Merman who made a remark that you have people coming to you and saying, or maybe it was Andrew coming to you and saying, hey, I want to become a coach. I want to be a coach. How do I do it? Isn't really a team coach really nothing more than a really good scrum master who got the changes to anchor and stick?
Most likely. I think that that's where I became before I was an agile coach, I called myself a scrum coach because scrum was the only framework I knew at the time. And so I'd done scrum long enough. So they were like, hey, can we just like come to you for scrum questions and you can be like kind of like the tiebreaker of things? And that's how kind of learned to start coaching, which is, well, scrum says this or it says that. So I don't know. I mean, maybe I think that's probably that may be a little black and white to call it that. So I don't know. Lef, do you disagree?
To me, we should just be coaches or agile gods, whatever works. That was a little humor. So to me, it's I don't know. I struggle with this comment. This conversation or question, I just feel like it's just gotten overly complicated. But I don't know if we take Scrum Masters and actually really invest in Scrum Masters to understand servant leaders. As coaches, all I am is a servant leader. I serve the organization to be better. I want to build schools within an organization and not prisons, right? So literally, how do we take the Scrum Master role? Because they're coaching a team. And how do we get them to look outside the team to understand organizational change? And how do they navigate through it? So can you scale a great team coach? Can you take someone that has been embedded in a team as a phenomenal scrum master and then put them in a coaching role to go above and beyond just at the team level? I don't know. Not that I don't think they can, but I think that there's a lot more involved to build a team when you're looking outside of just developers, testers, you know, UX, UI, whatever, individuals from a scrum team level.
Troy, thoughts? I think we lost him.
Sorry, I was I was on mute. Sorry. I just came to my head, and I could be way off here, but the question was about Scrum Master becoming an Agile coach. Is that effective? How is that? How do you become an Agile coach? Different things like that. How you become an Agile coach is just to change your resume. Now, whether or not you're any good is a different story. Okay. But there's literally no like criteria for it that everyone agrees upon, I don't think. So that being said, I do think there's different levels. So Merm was talking about when he first started, you know, the only thing he was really good at was Scrum when it comes to the framework, and that people would come to him for questions. So, I kind of think that's level one. Like level one is like, I know a lot of framework stuff and I know these practices and tools, right? And that's fine. Level two to me is kind of like, you know, I know how all these things tie back to a bigger picture, and I know that they're essentially meaningless if we're not getting the value, right? And to me, level three is like Agile is kind of meaningless if we're not getting any value, and Agile doesn't mean anything unless we get results, and Agile is just a tool for results. So who cares about Agile in general, right? I don't know what level four is because I haven't reached it, but I feel like I'm at level three right now. So if that means anything.
Was this like becoming a thetan? Like you're like different levels of being a thetan?
But yes,
I'm a thetan five, so I don't know where honestly, you guys are.
Honestly, when I listen to people talk, and even myself sometimes, I mean, you know, when I hear people talk about stuff, I'm like, why are we saying this? Why are we doing this? Like, we're going through the motions because it's almost like a some kind of playbook or some kind of safe Bible or Scrum Bible. And I'm like, who cares? If this is not effective, move on, right? It's all about all of delivery, right? Software development teams, the team coaching, all of this is to enable business results. Like, who cares about all this stuff? Like, that's why I don't, the idea of you being an Agile coach is something that's interesting to me, that term. But I don't know. You guys tell me if I'm crazy.
No, so it's interesting you say that. And I would even say, Troy, let's go like even a step above that, like more simple. Let's just go back to the fucking golden rule. Let's treat people like we want to be treated. How often do you see that? What happens when we walk into work? And as coaches, we have to point out is that's not nice. Why would you talk to somebody like that? Why would you think that someone wants to engage with you if you're acting like that or your behavior is like this? Why do we need to coach not only teams, but leaders on how to treat people like humans?
It's the same, it's the same reason why someone has to be called an enterprise coach.
Right, same there you reason. Go. So I can because like 57 an hour.
Yeah, it's like that, and it's also an egotistical thing, right? Let's be honest. So human beings, we have egos, and when different people are in hierarchical positions, that tends to lend itself to that. Now, not everyone has an ego. You know, different people behave differently, but I 100% agree with you. Ultimately, it comes down to people working together, and that's why the gentleman who created the Agile Manifesto, when they put that individuals and interactions as first, as the most important thing, I'm not saying it's the most important, but that was the first thing they listed. Every single day that I work, I'm reminded why that is and why it's like number one. And to me, that's the thing that usually is like pushed aside or seen as some kind of, oh, it's not technical, so who cares? Or it's not some process that we can follow like a Bible, so it gets pushed aside. And meanwhile, it is the most important thing. So that's just my opinion.
No, I love it, man. I definitely think that it's such a lost thing that we overcomplicate this ability to be intelligent when literally if you scale it back, it's just, why do we feel that there's some switch that's flipped that when we're in work, we're different people than when we are at home?
But I say this all the time. Like, no, I say this all the time, Lev. Like, I don't have a work and a like. I don't have a work persona and a personal life. I don't know how to. I don't know if any of you all do this. Like, I don't know how to do that. I don't know how to be like somebody different at work than I do at home. I find that really odd because now. I mean, I'm really shitty at taking my own advice. Yeah, I mean, I don't know how the things that I coach people to do every day, I'm really awful at taking that advice, which is why, you know, there's things like therapy and life coaching and whatever and such. But, you know, and why Agile conferences are literally us just diagnosing our own life problems, because we don't know how to apply the shit that we do to our own lives every day. But I don't know. I just think that that's weird.
So it's interesting you say that. And I find myself in my personal, because I do practice everything I preach. Well, not everything. Come on, I can't be a purist. But for the most part, I live, eat, and breathe this stuff. And that's why I love coaching. That's why I love what I do. So I do it in my personal life. And it drives the people in my family absolutely bonkers, right? Like, is this the way you talk to the people at work? And I'm like, well, yeah, it is. Well, now I no longer feel special. But it's interesting you say that. And I think, and again, this is my opinion, I think great coaching, it blurs that line. This isn't something you turn on and off. I'm exhausted at the end of a day because I've invested everything I have, not only at the client, but at my personal life, right? Whether I'm at a client or at home, I'm fully ingrained and invested. So I just, it's an exhausting mindset. And I don't think everyone is cut out for this type of work. And there's a lot of people that, hey, you know, you don't need to, you can call yourself a coach. Anyone can call themselves a coach. It really, it's just, hey, I'm a coach. I got my CSM, now I'm a coach.
So with that being said, this was an awesome conversation, and I think we could probably go for another hour, but I want to be conscious of everybody's time because it is running late. So I'm going to go around the horn for some final thoughts on the topic or anything else you want to throw out, and I'm going to start. You've been quiet for a bit, Troy, so I'm going to start with you.
I love everyone in this call.
That's awful. That is ridiculous, Troy.
And I love my work.
That's all you have to say for yourself?
Yes.
Merman, final thoughts?
We've been talking in Slack while we've been doing this podcast, and I love this kind of like dark side of coaching kind of topic that we've kind of uncovered. I feel like we don't talk about this shit enough. And how to help people enough, and like what are the ivory towers that we seem to be simultaneously building up and also trying to knock down in the community? And I feel like we need to address it more. So I don't know. I feel like we need to talk about this more. So I love that we stumble onto this.
Andrew?
Yeah, so as usual, Merm steals my thunder, but to echo what he's saying, I totally agree. I would love to hear from the other coaches or scrum masters in the community that are listening and participating in any of the Agile Uprising, forums in respect to what is the dark side of coaching as coaches, what is our ability to inspire the coaching community? So let's talk about some of the dirty secrets of coaching. Let's talk about it and really kind of engage in the community to see where other people feel, because I feel like this was an awesome conversation. And again, 45 minutes is never enough to really dig deep, but this is just to see that. So really, I want to engage the community to see where other people feel. And this is, I coach my teams the same way and my programs and my portfolios. This is my Dr. Phil speech. This is a safe place to talk about hard things. So let's get some courage out in the community and see where other people's heads are at and challenge us.
That word courage.
You said hard.
That word courage keeps coming up. And I always think about, you know, the Kent Beck quote and all that. And Merman, you talked about, you know, we don't talk enough as coaches, as practitioners. And there are things like therapy for those of us outside. And I think the two keys to self-improvement is to realizing that you need the improvement, and then realizing that you're not alone and there are other people that need the exact same type of improvement, maybe just out of a different flavor. So I know we started off this conversation trying to talk about one thing. We made a hard left and went to a much more, I think, exciting and interesting topic. But I do want to continue this conversation going forward. And I think Andrew called it out best. engage with us on Twitter. Please engage on the coalition. Let's hear from other coaches. Let's hear from people being coached. What do you think? What's the dark side? What's it, what happens when you get two coaches saying potato versus potato? Like what are the knock-on effects of that? Using dogma, you know, preaching to the converted, that sort of stuff. Let's continue the conversation. I'm not going to go around the horn because we're over time, so I'm not going to go around the horn for any last minute shout outs or pimps, but pimping of your personal wares and chilling. But I will say this: thank you, Chris. Thank you, Andrew. Thank you, Troy, joining us last minute. I think this was a really good conversation. Thanks again to our Agile Uprising audience. If you enjoyed the episode, please give us a review on iTunes, a rating. Leave a comment, iTunes, Stitcher, Blueberry, Podnet, wherever, Podbean, we're all over the place. If this is your first time tuning in, I'd ask you to subscribe. And please, if you would, be so kind as to join the conversation, share some stories, coalition.agileuprising.com. We look forward to hearing from you. And until next time, this is the Agile Uprising Podcast, signing off. We look forward to hearing from you. And until next time.
For the ones who get it done, the most important part is the one you need now. And the best partner is the one who can deliver. That's why millions of maintenance and repair pros trust Grainger. Because we have professional-grade supplies for every industry, even hard-to-find products. And we have same-day pickup and next-day delivery on most orders. But most importantly, we have an unwavering commitment to help keep you up and running. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.